We're going to start with a nice word in Parashas Eikev from the Baal Shem Tov. Aside from Baal Shem Tov, he brings a word from the Degel Machna Ephraim. Parashas Bichi Koisa, he brings from the Zayde, the Baal Shem Tov. This week it says, V'chaltav Savato V'rachtu. A person should eat until he's satisfied, right? That's when you thank Hashem. So he says that the Baal Shem Tov touched on the Pusik, Yoichli Anuvim V'yizbui, Pusik and Tilim, that those who are humble, Anuvim, they could eat until they're satisfied. So Hashem Tov explains what does humility have to do with being able to eat until someone is full? So he says, the Gemara Gittin says, that many that are learning now in Masech the Gittin, Lo'ilam yachal udam puchas mishlish, v'yish tepuchas mishlish, im yichos yamad amaliyoy. A person shouldn't eat or drink until he's completely full, because if he's going to get angry, the kas will have to have where to go. The anger fills him up, and if he already filled himself up with food and drink, he won't have where to put that anger. So the Degel says, the Baal Shem Tov explains, somebody who's humble, somebody who's full of humility, doesn't get angry, right? Somebody who doesn't think highly of himself. So automatically, what's gonna make him angry? What gets him upset? He anyway doesn't deserve anything. He's anyway not upset at anyone. So if that's the case, such a person could eat more. He can eat more, doesn't he? He doesn't have to have place for the anger to sit inside him. Now, of course, it's an interesting word. We understand how it's applicable. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Unav Mikaludam, the most humble person. And we find Chazal say that he was Bula Klal Kas. We don't understand what this really means. For who is this relevant? Who could say that he's humble enough to eat more because of it? But one thing that I think that it does teach us is that even though, of course, it would be better for a person never to get angry, even though, of course, it would be better for a person to work on himself to never be Bula Klal Kas, but people are people. Humans are humans. We have to be realistic. We have to realize that sometimes we will get angry. And Chazal are teaching us, don't eat too much because you might get angry. It happens. It happens to everyone. And I don't think this is called the worst case scenario, people that are afraid of everything. But yeah, human beings get angry, human beings get into conflict, human beings get upset at each other, and it's just part of life. So when it comes to relationships, so often the attitude people have is like, why do we talk about conflict? Why do we talk about compromise? Why do we talk about disagreements? The best way to do it is that we should always just agree and love each other and be there for each other 100%. And the answer is that it doesn't work like that in real life. And part of real life is understanding how to deal with disagreements and conflict and all kinds of different uncomfortable situations that happen in every home, in every relationship, and wherever there are real people. So with that, let me read a question. I'll read two. One is a question which is quite similar to something I just recently did in the Yiddish Shir, for those who heard it. And then the next one was a phone message that a couple left me. I'll get to that momentarily. Okay. Hi, thank you so much for all your lectures. They're very insightful and helpful. I appreciate the thoroughness of your answers that are all-encompassing based on the information you're given. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you. You have mentioned about your idea of three parts to boundaries in several lectures that I heard. One example was when the wife wants to sleep in Shabbos morning till around 3 p.m. and the husband wants to have a meal at a more reasonable time. In your answer, you mentioned that it's her part in regard to when she wakes up, but you were clear that it isn't something that it doesn't entail him to have to deal with the children in a less ideal way to accommodate her decision. My question is that I would have assumed that the timing of a Shabbos meal, which is an integral part of family life, is something that is part of ours as parents together. I understood from your answer that essentially it's her part as it pertains to her schedule. Another example that was given, I think in the same lecture, was about the timing of going to a wedding. I understood from you that besides for assuring a ride to the wedding for both spouses, each one is essentially entitled to their own decision regarding when they want to go. Now, I can understand this answer a drop easier. However, I assume that in many circles, the attendance of a sibling at a wedding is considered part of a family function. And therefore, I would think that such a decision should be worked out jointly between them, which you did offer three ways of working out the differences. In short, my assumption before listening to your lectures was that there are many things that are considered in the hours of a relationship, of husband and wife, which isn't meant for one to pull the card on the other. On the contrary, it obligates each of them in the relationship much more. I'm understanding from you that much more is really part of the his or hers. Can you please elaborate on this matter to clarify it for me? Thank you so much. P.S. I really appreciate the multifaceted blend of Torah Hashkafa shaping the approach to each and every scenario. You should merit to reach the potential of what you have to offer to Klal Yisrael. Thank you again. If I may add another point to be addressed on the same topic, we know that there's a concept of the husband being the leader of the house and he sets the tone. A Jewish marriage isn't two equal players. You've spoken about this as well. Where is the husband supposed to exercise his responsibility in the marriage? And where does it fit between the three parts boundaries that you divide the relationship with? Okay, that was the end of one letter. Another question, I see I added over here to my notes, that somebody else wrote, in regard to the class you mentioned about the guy who spends nights in the sauna, in the Schwitz, and leaves his wife at home alone. It sounded like you considered his decision about spending his nights out of the house to be his own boundary. I'm trying to understand, isn't it normal for a woman not to want to be alone? And if that's the case, doesn't this turn into a decision that should be shared territory? Okay, so just first until here. I mean, this is something that keeps on coming up whenever I talk about the idea of boundaries. And like I said, just 3 weeks ago, I think it was in Yiddish, in the Yiddish class, also a letter in Yiddish that was mamash so similar. People get very stuck on it. It almost sounds like people understand from my classes that I'm advocating, just splitting everything up and only agreeing on what you really, really have to because your mamash don't have a choice and things like that. That's what it sounds like almost. But okay, we'll discuss it in a moment. Then I had over here, I transcribed a message that was left on my hotline. The husband starts off saying, okay, this is a husband and wife leaving a message together. The husband starts off saying, my wife listens to your classes weekly and repeats very many nice things to me and in your name. Recently we discussed her going somewhere and she said something about going later than I wanted. When I asked her why she doesn't go earlier, she said, this is what works for me. From what I understand, this is what you got from your classes, that each person has their own boundaries and they should be able to control what is relevant for themselves. Is this really the Jewish way of doing things? My parents brought us up with the understanding that an ishak shayra oyser tzayin ba'ala. To me, it sounds like a secular way of living, two people each doing their own thing, not different than two boys in a dormitory room. Please let me know if this is a Jewish way of living, where a woman does what works for herself because it's her personal boundary. That was the husband speaking. Now the wife chimes in. It seems that my husband is a bit sensitive and took my words wrong. I think I presented it as a question. Why does it bother you if this is what works for me? Why would you care if I go earlier? All I meant to say was that I don't see why it makes any difference to him when I go, and if this is what works for me, I don't think that's a problem. It seemed like there wasn't a big difference when I go, and I was explaining to him that I'd rather do it when it works best for me. Okay, so here goes. Let me try my best to clarify things and see if this is something that people can understand. Like I said, I find myself repeating this concept very often, just trying to clarify it again and again, and I'm not really sure why, but I try my best. If anyone's still interested in hearing what I have to say, even if I repeat myself, that's fine. So one of the things that I mentioned in the class that I just referenced to a few weeks ago was that the idea of understanding what a boundary really means. Boundaries are not barriers. They're not there to separate ourselves from each other. They're not there to protect ourselves. They're just there to set up a certain guideline, understanding what a healthy relationship is about. Boundaries aren't trying to separate different parts of a relationship so that automatically we just only have to live together in a certain area, and other than that, we're on our own again, back to the way we were in yeshiva and school before we got married. That's not what it is. Another thing that I want to just mention up front is that the whole idea of boundaries has nothing to do with marriage. Nothing to do with marriage. When I talk about boundaries, I mean that every two people that are in a relationship, as big and small as that relationship may be, as close, as far, whatever it is. It could be a neighbor, it could be a third cousin, it could be a business associate, it could be a sister, it could be a parent, it could be a spouse, it could be a child. No matter what relationship you're in, it's important to realize that in every relationship, by default, there are things that should still remain belonging to each person individually. And then there are the things where the relationship combines us and we are in a relationship over that. And that's where we really connect in what belongs to ours. Now, the way healthy people are living, and when I say healthy people, I mean people that have it right, they do it right, they're happy, they're getting it naturally done in a way that makes both of them happy. Okay, people that don't have to be taught and don't have to be guided and don't have to be helped. And there may not be that many such people, but there are. There are people that they just get it right. They're living together happily for 50 years straight. They never needed help. And they rarely quarrel. They like each other and they help each other. The way these people are living generally is along with the boundaries that I'm suggesting. Meaning in every relationship, there will be mine, yours, and ours. And that's how healthy people are doing it. What I'm suggesting about boundaries is not coming and saying like, okay, everybody just surrender certain parts of this relationship and just do it very technically. No, I'm telling you what many healthy people do naturally. They give each other space. They're happy when the other one is doing what works for them best. They agree and they get along on wherever they're combined and making decisions, things that are relevant to both of them. And that's very often what just works. Now, some people don't have this natural, instinctive feeling for how to make that work. And some people do get stuck on, but I want you to do things my way. Or, I know, and you want me to do something the way you want, and it starts getting a little confusing. And that's when you have to start spelling it out and saying, one second, let's break it down. Let's break it down to a science and figure out what really does belong to who and how that would be best. Very many people, I feel, that are challenging this idea, and nothing personal, Chas v'Shalom, I don't mean anyone, but very many people that challenge this idea are people that don't have that natural, instinctive way of getting along. And they don't have that natural feeling for respecting the other person's boundary and letting people make their own decisions and feeling great about the fact that my wife is doing what she likes. I'm so happy about that. My husband is going when he wants. I'm so thrilled. And, oh, this pertains to both of us. Let's have a normal, healthy conversation about it and just figure out what works best for both of us. Many people don't have that. Automatically, they're feeling challenged by, hey, how come I don't have a say in that? Or how would you allow someone to do that? What if my wife will do such a thing? And they don't realize that a lot of this is coming from a certain challenge that people are feeling, which, again, it's normal. It's normal. I'm not saying that it's normal for everyone to figure it out on their own. I'm just suggesting that a lot of this idea is simply the healthy way to do it, and when people can't get it on their own, it's good to spell it out. Now, if a couple would agree, or naturally agree, or not naturally agree, but just agree because they agreed upon it, to put more things in the hours category, I say, you know what? I have feelings about how you dress, and you have feelings about who I associate with, and I'm fine with that. I want to make you happy. You want to make me happy. We're only here for each other. We don't care what other people think. You're not dressing for anyone else, just for me, right? And I don't care about my friends. I care just about you. And if a couple could really, honestly, say that all I care about is you and all you care about is me, so let's decide together on everything. And when I buy something to wear and you buy something to wear, it belongs to both of us because it affects both of us. That's great. If a couple could put all that into the hours category and decide to agree on it and decide happily to want to make each other happy and accommodate each other and take each other seriously, wonderful. Wonderful. I think it's the best thing in the world. It's just that very often doesn't happen. Very often, naturally, people do get stuck on, but I like something this way, and I'm allowed to have things that I like. And when you start challenging me, yeah, but why do you care more about that than me? That's what people don't realize, where they start overstepping boundaries. If I'm wearing something, and there's no specific reason for you to really care, even though you do care, and there's no specific reason for you to think that it's reflecting directly on you, even though you do feel so, it's still important for you to realize that this decision belongs to me. So my point is that, of course, when you break it down, like one questioner put it, it sounds like there's so little left in the hours that we really have to agree on. Okay, it's our children, our home. But in general, when it comes to schedules and things like that, you know, we could all separate it. No, if you could put it all in the hours, that's wonderful. I'm talking for the people who can't or the people who don't want to. And many people don't want to. And many people don't have to. And it's very important for people to realize this and to know how to respect that willingly. It's not about pulling cards and saying, well, I heard or I grew and say that it's my... If the person who wants to pull that card already has that feeling. The question is if you can respect it and understand it instead of getting all confused and hurt about it. So what happens is that when people don't do this willingly, and they don't allow each other the space that they would each want or appreciate willingly, automatically it starts becoming a little problematic, and that's where you do have to start understanding it. Now, what I say sometimes is that it's sad. I hear this from people who challenge also the idea of boundaries. Like, that's called a real relationship? That's called a loving relationship? So think about it. In the name of looking for the real loving relationship, I'm not going to let my spouse do what she wants, because that's not real love. In other words, in the name of showing bias, I'm going to make sure that my spouse doesn't think that she could do what she wants, or my wife shouldn't let me do what I want, because we want to have real showing bias. So in the name of looking for showing bias, we're busy fighting all day about who should do what when. I mean, seriously, is that called showing bias? It would be simpler if we just agreed to have that 80% shalom bias, which we don't have now because we're busy arguing all day, and agree to disagree, agree to give space, agree to understand that it's not exactly the way I want. I would want you to want so much what I want, like the Mishnah says, "Asayda tzoyner kid tzanechu," so you can touch. Do Hashem's wish as if it's your own wish. It shouldn't look like you're overexerting yourself to do what Hashem wants because you really want something else. No, you should reach a level where you're doing Hashem's desire, because that's your desire. As if it's your own. It would be wonderful, I'm saying, if couples would be holding by that madraiga of ahal ach v'shulim v'rayas, where I want to do what you want, right? But if I don't want to do what you want, I'm not holding there. So in the name of getting me to reach that 100%, you know, level, we're busy fighting at 50 instead of agreeing to get to 80. And I'll respect the fact that you do care how your siblings look at how you look, you know, how you look dressed by a chasna, maybe even a drop more than the way you care about how I think. Maybe. it's just something that I think people have to understand. Now, like one's asking over here, the Ishak Shadrach of Sarimbala, or what you call the, what was it? The husband being the leader of the house, you know, that executive power of a husband, right? Executing that executive power of a husband to say, I want it this way, and my wife should listen. I spoke about this then as well. It could be right. It could be right. It's not always right, by the way. And I discussed it over there, you know, different sources where we find that a husband shouldn't be controlling his wife. He's not supposed to. He's not allowed to, technically. Which means that even though he might have the power to do so, and even though his wife might really be obligated to listen to him when he does, it's the wrong thing to do. So it's not always so simple. My point is just that even when you're allowed to, and even when it's not necessarily wrong, but that's not the healthy way to do things. In other words, it's healthier for, it's more correct for a husband to say, you know what, this pertains to you, do it your way. So is he allowed to say, I want it done my way? He could. Especially when it comes to something that's ours, and he is the leader of the home. Yes, he could put his foot down and say, this is how we're doing it in our house. You don't have to like it. But does that bring shalom bias? Does it make people happy? No. So I'm suggesting that people are considerate of respecting and accepting willingly the fact that some things belong to me, some to you, some to ours. Let's agree on what we want to put into that ours. And if only we could put all the more in there, that would be the best. And if not, let's see if we really could split it up. And it might not be all that confusing. Now, the idea of boundaries very often does get confusing because people do assume that what you're doing really does affect me personally. And here's where it gets a little touchy. You know, I understand you're the one doing it, but you know how this reflects on me. You know how my siblings are going to look at it if you don't come to the chasna and things like that. It's true. And that's why I keep on saying that if only people would really have that true loving feeling for each other where they wouldn't have to be listening to my classes. Not that anyone listening has a problem, Chaz v'Shalom. Just someone last week tells me, I watch your classes, Baruch Hashem, most of it is halacha v'lo lamasa. You know, most of it is not relevant. Beautiful. You know, it's still nice to hear ideas and to be respectful and to understand how it should work and how it, even if it's not relevant. My point is just that it's very easy to say that what you're doing affects me directly. Right? The way you're dressing, or the way you're going, or when you're waking up, it all affects me directly. Which automatically means that almost anything you're going to do, if you're married to someone, will affect the other person directly, as long as that person decides that it's affecting them directly. And this has no end, you know? Even when you just wake up late, it affects me directly, because I don't like it. I really don't like it. It puts me in a bad mood. I want a spouse who's up 6 a.m. That's like real, that's what I grew up with, that's what I respect, that's what I... When you get up at 7, I know, I understand there's nothing to do before 7, but it eats at me a whole day, it kills my mood. So it's affecting me directly, right? The answer is no. It's not affecting me directly. I can decide how it affects me or how it doesn't affect me, and I can learn to deal with that kind of affecting. But at the end of the day, it boils down to who is this affecting directly? Who's making the choice and the decision? And how is it affecting someone else? And over there where it is affecting someone else, that's where you want to say, listen, this I'm not going to deal with just because you decided to make a decision. So back to the Shabbos meal. Yes, of course, the Shabbos meal belongs to the home and the family. And of course, in normal, healthy circumstances, even not in the 100% shalom bias situations, we should agree on when we have a Shabbos meal. And it wouldn't be normal for one to say, well, I'm eating my meal 5 p.m., so go, you know, fly a kite. No, of course that's wrong, and we should agree. But what do you do when somebody does do that? What do you do when someone says, this is what works for me, I'm not able to accommodate you? Should you start fighting over it? Should you start disagreeing and debating and getting all stuck on, so we're not going to have a Shabbos meal because we didn't yet decide when it's going to be? Or, you know what, for the time being, you have it when you want, and at least let me have it when I want. Now, it's not ideal, and I don't believe in that. I'm just talking about situations where that is the case. That's happening. So what do we do now if it's happening? Do we start fighting about it? Do we wait for a third party to come in and somehow get two people to agree on the exact timing? Or on some level, in some cases, it's best to say, you know what, I'm not going to make you do things my way, but please understand me as well, and let's work out the parts that do affect each other. Another thing that I want to clarify, which I think sometimes people miss, is that it's totally fine to ask nicely for anyone to accommodate you about anything. In other words, even if it doesn't affect me at all, what you're doing affects me nothing. I'm not around, I don't even see it, but I know about it. I just happen to know about it. Am I allowed to ask you to do things my way? I'm away for a month on business, right? Am I allowed to ask you to wash the dishes before you go to sleep instead of when you get up, or to do this on your own and not have the cleaning lady do it and have her do something else, because that's how I like it done? Or, you know, why are you intruding someone else's boundary? The answer is, I could ask you. I could ask you, as long as we're asking nicely, as long as we're communicating, like mentioned, with respect and you know, just asking nicely. If I let you say no, and I'm telling you why it means something to me or why it doesn't mean something to me, there's no reason not to. The point of boundaries is not a stop sign that says, stay away. this is mine, stay away. That's a mistake that I think people are sometimes getting stuck on. It's fine for a husband to ask a wife to go early, to go late, just because that's how I like it. I don't know, just because. I don't know why. Or because that's what I think is the right thing to do. Or because I think people might think highly of me if you do it that way. Or whatever it is, it's fine to ask, as long as we give each other the space to make decisions. Now, getting back to this phone message of husband and wife that are getting stuck on something over here, where the husband said, why are you going? Why don't you go earlier? And she said, that's what works for me. And she says, that's not what I meant. Again, I'm not a referee. And by the time I'm addressing this, I don't even know if they remember this conversation or not. They may have been through another many such conversations. I don't know. But it sounds more like a communication issue than a boundary issue. The husband seems to be blaming it on the idea of boundaries, that his wife is reserving the right to make a decision about when to go somewhere. And she claims that's not what she meant. I'm not saying who's right and wrong. I'm just saying this sounds more like a communication issue. And I think that especially when it comes to the idea of boundaries, it's very important that this is communicated correctly. Because very often, part of the reason why people get so stuck on the idea of boundaries, well, it's my decision, it's your decision, I should make the decision, is the way it's communicated. If you communicate to someone, I'm doing it my way because it's mine, and I'm allowed to make my own decision, and you talk like that, it's very confrontational, it's very condescending, it's very hurtful, it's very, what's the word? Distancing. That's not nice. That doesn't make anyone feel good. If you know how to tell someone, listen, I understand that you want me to go earlier, I'm the one going and it's really hard for me, I would appreciate if you could just give me the space and understand that for me it works better, it's really okay. Maybe another time I'll be able to go earlier if it's possible. If you just communicate it nicely, I think you'll get so much further. That's first of all. Another thing is, both for husband and wife, it's for the wife to make sure she's being heard and understood. So make sure you're saying it the way that it will be understood, when you talk to your cleaning lady, make sure she understands you. And you could ask your husband when he starts getting all upset at you, instead of debating with him or proving him wrong, just ask him, I'm afraid that I wasn't understood. Did you understand what I said? And let him repeat it. Dr. May Wickler has a book, 10 Minutes to a Better Marriage, where he talks about, you know, one spouse saying something, the other one answering and making sure it was understood and repeating it. And there's something about communication that sometimes people don't even realize. They're not communicating. He says A, she heard B. By the time she answers C, he heard D. And now they're getting all into this whole argument without even realizing you're not arguing about what's right and wrong. You're arguing about what each other said. So instead of she getting stuck on, but he's so sensitive, that's not what I meant, and him getting stuck on, is the idea of boundaries a Jewish boundary? I mean, again, you're not even talking about the same topic anymore. So I think that's very important for people to make sure that they're communicating. One more thing I want to pick up on that conversation was where the wife says, I think my husband is very sensitive, or a bit sensitive. I don't know the exact wording. I transcribed it from a message. First of all, it's not the best thing to say in front of your husband, because it seems like you were both on the phone at the same time. I wouldn't suggest that. But another thing, based on my book, for those who read it, those who want to read it, a great book, Baruch Hashem, Get Along With Everyone. The idea of sensitivity, which I do believe is at the core of every interpersonal relationship conflict, where sensitivity gets in the way and people get emotional about things that were done or said, and then taken out of context and react accordingly or whatever. The idea of sensitivity is not to use against someone. I've seen many people make that mistake. I don't know where they found it in my book or my classes, but they basically wave the book in front of the spouse and says, you know what it says in this book? That you're very sensitive and difficult. It says over here that the reason why we're not getting along is because when I say something, you totally turn it around and misinterpret and react, you know, totally emotional. It makes no sense. I don't think anyone ever got anywhere doing that. The idea of understanding somebody else's sensitivity is not to tell them they're sensitive or to use it to justify yourself. Well, he's sensitive, so he misunderstood. It's to understand sensitivity. And if you're right that your spouse is sensitive, which I have no idea if that's the truth or not, deal with it. When you're talking to somebody who's sensitive, be even clearer with your communication, and even softer and even gentler with what it is that you want to convey, because that's what sensitivity means. This is all aside from another mistake that I've seen people make, and that is that if somebody's very sensitive, which even if they are, I'm saying, which I don't know if you assessed properly or not, but even if somebody's sensitive, it doesn't always mean they're wrong, by the way. It's true that very often, or most often, if not always, sensitivity is at the core of a conflict, but it doesn't mean that the person who's sensitive is always wrong. I think that's also something where people just dismiss a sensitive person because, oh, he's so sensitive, without thinking like, but is he saying something? It could be many people would let it go because they're less sensitive. It doesn't mean that they're wrong or that you should be dismissive of their feelings or comments or thoughts or interpretations for that matter. I think it's very important to communicate properly and gently and to make sure that no part of any kind of boundary setting should ever come across challenging or protecting for that matter. So aside from it being normal, let me just finish off with this thought. Yes, best case scenario, it's wonderful if a couple marries and just always wants to please each other. They don't even need boundaries. They don't even want to know what it is. Everything that's mine is yours. What's yours is mine. Shali, shalach, 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 or shalach, shali, or however you want to word it, and we're all good. That would be wonderful. It doesn't work like that in real life. I talk sometimes to chasanim before they get married, and I'm talking about the idea of boundaries and just understanding what belongs to who. You know, when it comes to buying a carriage and your wife is the one pushing it in the street, maybe you should let her choose, etc., and things like that. And in general, just knowing how to not control someone, how to not be controlled. So I get this response sometimes, even just from chasanim. I remember one specific case where somebody tells me something like, this is totally irrelevant for me. I said, really? How do you know? I said, because the person I'm marrying is so easy and so flexible and so accommodating that this whole idea of not getting along and having disagreements and me wanting one thing, she wanting another thing, it's totally irrelevant. So you're just wasting your time talking about this topic over here. And we should talk about other things. It so happened to be that I knew, he didn't know that I know, but I knew personally that he was wrong about the person he's marrying. It so happens to be, but that's irrelevant. My point is that even if I wouldn't have known it, it's nice to live in fantasy land that you're going to marry someone who, when you'll be cold, she'll wear a sweater, right? And when you're tired, he'll go to sleep because we're just mamish one piece. It doesn't work like that in real life. It doesn't work like that. So it's not just a bidyevid, which it happens to be that even if it is only a bidyevid, you have to deal with it, because if your situation is requiring a certain understanding of what belongs to who, then you're already in a situation where, okay, let's deal with the fact that even if I would have wanted it to be all one, it's still not all one. And even if I would have wanted all decisions to be made together, or the executive power of husband to always be used and in place and respected, it doesn't work like that. So even if it's only b'dieved, at least deal with the metzias. But I could say that under normal circumstances, the healthy people are already doing it. It's not that they don't need it, they're already doing it. I think there's something that very many people could learn from. So I just want to summarize and make sure that I'm being clear, and I hope that my message is becoming clearer as time goes on. The idea of boundaries, what belongs to me, you, and ours, is not as much right and wrong, which that's debatable, like how right is it, where did the boundary end, where does it start? It's more about what works. It's more about what helps people live properly, what helps people live respectfully. And even when something does affect you, it's always good to remember that as much as it affects you, it's still someone else's decision, and to be respectful of that. And to communicate this in a way that doesn't sound challenging. To communicate this in a way that people feel understood. And in general, when you're communicating with somebody sensitive, to communicate even gentler and even more, taking them even more into consideration. What Hashem's help, knowing the lechatchilas and the evids of a relationship, knowing what to do when we don't exactly want the same thing, and knowing how to do it and how to split it up in a way that we can both expect for this to be consistent and ongoing, I think that's similar to the idea of what Chazal tells us, not everyone could eat until they're full, because some people just have to realize you might get angry one day. So it would be wonderful if you could be from the category of people who will never get angry and you could eat all you want, but it doesn't work like that for most people. And the same thing is just understanding how conflict resolution works. It's important to have a way to deal with these things and understand that if it's not the way you want, where do we split it up in a way that we make sure it doesn't get out of control and out of bounds and no track and no stability at all. Let's try to put it together and realize where I could let you have yours and you let me have mine, and then we could still have ours and agree on what we have to agree and live together.